This is the People's Game, and I wasn't alive in 1950, but I'm guessing that that was the most dramatic moment in the history of the U.S. Men's World Cup soccer team. Landon Donovan scoring after the 90th minute to put the United States through to the second round. It was a match that they deserved to win, but they were going down as both a team that tragically was missing opportunities in front of the goal, boy, and almost comically, and then being robbed of two goals that they should have had, both against Slovenia and earlier in the match against Algeria. Boy, I was in an absolutely packed pub, a British pub in Los Angeles. They're British fans, they're American fans, and everybody literally is jumping up and down like they were. Everybody in there was like a 16-year-old punk doing pogo back in 1977, and people were literally hitting their heads against the fans. No one was decapitated, I'm glad to say. This is Alan Minsky. I'm here with Jennifer Doyle and Pablo Morales. That is at least the first thing off the top of my head. Jennifer, what do you got to say?
Well, I think I spent most of the match on the floor pounding my fists and wailing. That was an incredibly stressful match to watch. I'm afraid that we were getting a glimpse of what the U.S. is missing, which is a great finisher. I'm getting a little bit impatient with the complaints about the refereeing and goals not being identified as goals because they have offside position, bad calls. They shouldn't be in the position where that matters. I mean, they had so many shots on goal, so many shots that hit the post or went right at the goalkeeper, opportunities which, you know, just like a 5% more something, right, would actually be converting. So I was really frustrated because, it was that glimpse of potential not being quite realized. I'm incredibly grateful to Landon Donovan for securing the win because really the U.S. seemed to be the much more creative and attacking side in the game. They were doing brilliantly, but Algeria seemed to have a great defensive read on them nevertheless. And then Algeria seemed to be playing a fairly predictable kind of game. You could see their attacks coming miles away. And yet the U.S. didn't seem to be properly covering them. It was a harrowing game to watch. So don't let that win fool you into thinking that somehow this was a tremendous performance and a perfectly deserved victory. I'm not going to complain too much about the U.S. because, again, I think we did really well. But it was by no means evident that we were going to get that win, obviously, right? It was secured at the very last, most desperate moment. Thank God.
Yeah, no, Jozy Altidore is a strong presence up front, holds the ball well, has great moves running at the goal. One goal for Hull this season in the Premiership. So the actual last moment is missing. Pablo Morales, a filmmaker, gringos at the gate. I got to frame it this way again. I think the gringos just, they got the key. They opened the door. They're through the gate. They're in the castle.
Well, that would be really nice. I have to say I didn't see it quite as negatively as Jennifer Doyle, maybe because of the many decades of watching the United States and feeling that, yeah, I mean, half my attention was on the England screen, hoping that Slovenia manages to get that tie, because even though there are so many elements to the American game that haven't fully blossomed, we just don't have that pool of players that are at the top level yet. And that's understandable. We started this marathon of world soccer 20 years behind everybody else. Okay, we're so catching up, it's comical at times. Yeah. Now, that being said, luck has played a big part of this tournament and every World Cup.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with getting lucky, considering how many times we haven't been.
Yeah.
So, I also was expecting actually to see a 0-0 tie at late into the game because I just haven't seen, I just didn't think we had that luck today.
I should say too, I know I'm being a little bit harsh, especially when the parallel game featured England, a side which does have players of that ability, right, and whom we should be expecting to sort of knock away goal after goal confidently and with the assurance that we see throughout the year as they play for their clubs, and they have been absolutely dismal. My comments should be read in sort of the context, a larger context.
Well, two things. First of all, USA won the group, by the way.
Yeah.
So if Germany in the betting odds are they're going to probably eliminate Ghana later today, but we'll see. Ghana has obviously so much emotion behind this themselves in this match being really the best hope for Africa. Now that Algeria is out, really the only hope for Africa to put a team through to the second round. So we would avoid Germany if Germany wins, and which means we'd either be playing in all likelihood Serbia or Ghana going into the match. I think that would be, you know, betting odds even. So the United States, I think, has established itself as a formidable team, as opposed to, say, if Slovenia had gone through. In no way would they be thought of in the second round as a formidable side. The other thing I want to say is Holland, the Netherlands. Do you know what they were in the 1960s and 50s? One of the doormats of European soccer, okay? Mm-hmm. America, we 20 years behind? Well, 1990, we've qualified for the World Cup. We've been there since. But it was only in the 70s that Holland turned into the factory of total football. And have remained established as such. We've had national sides. You know, Hungary was the greatest thing in the world in the 50s, completely fall off the map. With the talent pool, the youth organized soccer, the culture of sort of underground culture of soccer that now is burgeoning in the cities in the United States with large immigrant populations that are passionate, I think this is a really key moment in terms of the development of a global soccer power.
But you have to go back to the fact that in Holland all those years, they still had only one major sport, which was football.
Right.
And they had one of the great rivalries of all time in Europe, which was, you know, Ajax against Eindhoven. So, I mean, that developed great players in and of itself.
But 12 million people in Holland, 310 million people in the United States, and incredible organized youth soccer.
I'm going to go against the flow here just because, yes, I'm watching the World Cup, and yes, I was rooting for the U.S. Right. However, I just can't put my energies behind rooting for the U.S. to have a top national team in the world, as if that's going to represent the success of our soccer culture on the ground.
Oh, I agree. So, there's a lot there. And I also, believe me, I have incredible ambiguity.
That's a part of the conversations around the World Cup that make me a little bit uneasy, which is that we put all this hope on this one national team as if it's going to solve all of our problems, right? As if they get to the quarterfinals even, that somehow that's going to advance the game here, and that's going to mean more support for, say, migrant communities who play the game on unpermitted fields.
Absolutely
while being policed
right
aggressively. Like, I actually don't see there being a strong relationship between the two, or a predictable relationship between the two. So,
but all that it is, in my estimation, is wind in the sails of trying to push all of that in a positive direction. For those of us here who love soccer and want it to be a progressive community, one that where class and ethnic barriers are eliminated in the long run, but at least combated in the short term, and to bring this joyous global community and culture into the United States for the people who live here, not for national glory. Again, I've always thought that the paradox of the United States and the World Cup and United States soccer is the World Cup in so many countries is this source of incredible jingoistic nationalism, whereas here, as we see from Glenn Beck's objection to it, right, and Fox News' rejection to it, here it is about internationalism more. You
know. But it's a split community. Makes it more interesting than a lot of the soccer cultures around the world. The United States doesn't have one culture with regards to soccer. And not only that, it is by far the most unique soccer culture just because of the way it was created within already a post-imperialistic country. I mean, we already ruled everything. There was just one more thing we hadn't done yet. But when you look at how it was formed by immigrant populations within the United States who are always seen as less than, it has a much harder struggle. That's why I am a huge U.S. soccer fan.
And it's also coded as a women's game. I mean, the Fox News,
right,
the Beck, I mean, laced through their rants is, you know, it's not only anti-immigrant, anti-intellectual, it's, you know, anti-feminist and homophobic. It's all that stuff is kind of balled up into the way that position on the right, when what they latch onto with soccer, it's associations with all of the wrong people, basically.
But see, this is the thing. My thought, too, is like for all of us, again, who want a positive, progressive soccer culture here in the United States to continue to grow, it's like, okay, this is a moment where we can say game on, and particularly game on for a country with a soccer culture that has a much greater degree of gender parity. And Jennifer can correct me if I'm wrong. Other countries come somewhat close. And I know there's not gender parity. But compared to so many of the great global soccer powers where there was anything but gender parity.
But we don't have gender parity. We have Title IX. We have a legislative mechanism which allows people who support women's sports to fight for resources. So I'd say that's an important way to difference in approaching it, because there's a lot of mythology about there being a near total equality around soccer. Now, I actually think some of the right-wing hysteria around soccer is actually related to Title IX and the kinds of incursions of women's sports on the college level, especially around football programs, which basically make Title IX compliancy almost impossible to meet. So it's like, you know, this is a complex network of stuff. I'm eager to get back to talking about the game itself.
Let's do it.
So, because I want to talk about Dempsey, because I was frustrated because I was, you know, I saw him with opportunities to score and taking shots and then not quite converting. And Pablo's right. A lot of that was bad luck. He had a lot of pluck today, and he could have really lost his head. He took a punch in the face, off the ball, and which the referee didn't see. And you could see a cut lip, in the last few minutes of the game. He could have easily lost his head there. That the game could have completely disintegrated around that moment, and it didn't. And those guys get a lot of my respect for that, for holding onto their concentration and not letting those kinds of shenanigans pull their attention away from the ultimate goal.
Yeah, and the guy who got the red card in the end, the captain of Algeria, a very unjust red card in terms of that moment, actually was the guy who smacked Dempsey and should have gotten a red card right then.
Yeah.
I think Dempsey is sort of the prototype of, I hope, what becomes the U.S. style, which is, you know, here he comes from a small town in middle Texas, which doesn't have any soccer culture in terms of the white community at all. He associates himself more with the hip-hop side of his own community. He has a fearlessness, a pluck, a bravado, whatever you want to call it, and he's unafraid. And that shows when he plays for his English club team as well. And I think that actually that spirit was evident against Slovenia when they came back from two down. Also, when he scored the goal against England, I'm terribly impressed with him. I wish he had more luck on his finish today. But
and Jozy Altidore, I mean, on the Twitter feeds, people were strangely impatient with him. But I thought he really pushed forward with the ball. He had some amazing runs where he beat two defenders. I mean, I saw him do that at least twice, if not three times, and either cross the ball in a beautiful way or draw the foul. He had that kind of work that often doesn't really get glorified because he's not making a shot on goal, but he's bringing the ball up the field, kind of completing the impulse of a transition in the game, and doing it with force and conviction and just a really great moves with his feet. I was really pleased with his contribution to the game today, in the second half especially.
You know, a lot of people say, well, he only had one goal for Hull. He's, you know, he doesn't really do so much. But if you watch those games against Hull, when he was on the field, Hull was winning the games. He did the little things, take on the defender, body up against. And when he was just a teenager, we have to remember, he went and just cleaned up on the MLS, which many people say, well, that's not much of a league. I think it's one of the top leagues in the Western Hemisphere. I watch a lot of the Argentine, Brazilian, Mexican league games. And although maybe player for player, it's not a to those levels, organizationally, it's tough to be a forward in the MLS and score a lot of goals. And he did as a teenager. I think he has a lot of promise.
I love the moment when Buttle came on the field in his first touch. He just had such composure directing the play. I thought that was the nice moment right there. And then the play that he called for sort of worked. I liked when they attacked the touch line and came in down there. It's actually what produced the goal in the end. For a while there, they were going too much through the middle, and Algeria was clogging the middle. Obviously a little shaky on defense, especially in the first 25 minutes. Why didn't Gooch play? I'm not sure.
Yeah, no one knows. I just texted somebody who might know the answer. I got nothing. So.
Yeah, other than Gooch being out, I thought Bradley's substitutions, though, were pretty smart. And I like seeing Beasley at the end. You know, that was definitely, okay, this guy means we're going for it. Now we're pulling off a defender and basically putting on an offensive wing player. Bradley, too, in the middle, the coach's son, is a darn steady force for them right now.
They kept their heads today. It was a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see Bradley as the one who's going to come out of this World Cup with a nice, sweet contract to the EPL. I mean, that's my feeling.
I wouldn't be surprised if Buttle gets something, by the way.
Oh, God, we can't lose Donovan and Buttle on the Galaxy. Sorry.
Well, Buttle is really strong, and I haven't seen him enough to really say. And I agree about Altidore. Altidore's got mad skill on the soccer field, and hopefully now again. You know, I do think in the back of their mind they had that goal taken away against Slovenia. They had the first half that they had in the back of their mind. Terrible performance in the first half against Slovenia. Now they're in clean space, so we really get a chance to see what this team does. And boy, are we going to have, I think, again, for the first time in my life, for nothing like 2002. This is going to be 4 days of intense hype.
What I find scary is that Algeria, as well as they played in certain ways, they were really not great up front.
Right.
So, and the U.S., that the U.S. did not look that great defensively against a team that wasn't really challenging them up front. I find that a little bit scary. There seemed to be a lot of pockets and holes today, and I just other teams are not going to let them get away with that.
Well, we're sending this out as a special edition of the People's Game before the regular show broadcast to try to get it around to national media. So we do not know the result yet, who England will face in the next round or the United States will face in the next round. But there could be, if Germany beats Ghana, England versus Germany. England looks so flat. I do want to say this, though. You know, I don't know how many people out there know Fabio Capello. His record as a manager is really unrivaled. It's true he had a talent base that probably surpassed Mourinho, but in his early part of his career, he was the coach of an AC Milan team that has pretty much, for major European competitions, the most incredible unbeaten record. Arsenal, you know, had this great record in the Premiership. AC Milan was in all competitions. You know, that's how great they were. He was the coach. Everywhere he went, he won, except for Real Madrid, and then he sort of ducked out and went into the international game. Too much of the two superstar-laden team of the Ronaldo-Beckham era. He couldn't get that to win. But he won with Juve, the team that was the core of the Italian World Cup championship in 2006. So I expect more from them when they're facing tougher competition.
Yeah, I think that's part of the story is they need to be inspired.
Yeah, I think that's the problem is that Capello is really expecting them to be professional, you know, calm, cool, collective. But, I mean, how many people, when you play with English players, they are all about emotion. You know, the reason that they developed this game of kick and rush, as was derogatorily said, I think a lot of it is because they just feel like you just got to get up there. You just got to go up and score the goal now to the wing, to the center, score. And that's not how world soccer is played anymore. It, you know, look at Spain to see how world soccer or Argentina, you know, control the midfield, control the tempo, control possession.
But I do think if they face Germany, I expect to see that team fall into line and they'll again recognize the asset they have in Capello. How else could they approach a match against a team with the strength of Germany without, you know, recognizing that, you know, this guy knows what he's doing in terms of managing a soccer team? Maybe not, but I expect that'll happen, especially if they face Germany. Again, enough about England. Lastly, let's go to Pablo first, a filmmaker, Gringos on the Gate, the moment Donovan scores.
If you're a longtime U.S. soccer fan, the goal that supposedly was heard around the world was Paul Caligiuri's goal against Trinidad and Tobago in 1989 that put the U.S. into their first World Cup in the modern era. Guess what? That, Paul, I like you a lot. You're a great guy, but I think Donovan just surpassed your shot heard around the world. At least a lot more people saw this one on TV.
Well, let's remember, too, that quite a few players touched that ball before Donovan did. So I think that was an incredible shot, but it was also icing on the cake for just a really kind of great group effort in the last few minutes of the game to put it away. It also reminded me of a kind of observation I made a little while ago on my blog that the closest cousin to soccer is basketball. I know no other sport where a really great game is decided by frequently, very frequently decided by 1 point, 2 points, right? There's just like the only, you know, the difference is, of course, basketball, you know, it's shot, basket. And in soccer, it's just that one. But it has a very similar kind of, to me, drama. And I was reliving some of my past years when I was following NCAA basketball. And that just kind of last minute shot that puts the game away and that just very specific euphoria to that. And it's not every day in soccer that you get that in the last minute of play. So it was just a great game to watch.
I have absolutely nothing to add except, you know, I've had a very ambivalent relationship to Team USA. Grew up, my side was always the Azzurri. I dreamed of playing for Team USA. And I felt uneasy about the USA doing well in World Cups in the past or going into it. I didn't care if they did. I was happy when they did in 2002. But by this World Cup, I in being in Los Angeles and seeing the incredible soccer culture that is there, that doesn't get enough attention, that so many people could participate and find joy in, I think this is a moment that helps that all along. I was rooting for them today. And again, I was one of those people at the top of my head hit the fan. Jennifer Doyle from a Left Wing, Pablo Morales, Gringos at the Gate. This is the People's Game. Mark Torres, a lifelong football fan, has watched the USA on the margins of the global game. You're a big Premiership fan. Your side is Liverpool. Your player is Torres, of course. And what does this victory signify for you?
It was absolutely amazing. We came 90 minutes through this match thinking that, you know what, we're going home. I mean, England scored an early goal. It looked like England and Slovenia were going to be pushing through. And really, the United States had so many chances. Dempsey had a wide open shot. I mean, they were just pounding the goal, couldn't get it in, hit the post. Balls were just in the box waiting to be slotted through. Couldn't happen. And in the 91st minute, you know, Tim Howard was amazing. There was a shot on goal. He saved it. And does he just, you know, rejoice and hit the ground or something? No, he's aware. And he throws it out to Donovan and starts a 4-on-3 break. That was just classic. And it's huge for American soccer because it's really not the go-to sport. Basketball, baseball, football, those are the glamour sports here in the United States. And for the United States to do that well at a turning point in soccer here in America, it's huge.
Here's my thought for you, my one question for you right now. I think this is a highly, highly important moment in our entry into the global game because now we have a team that moves into the second round. They're not a slight team. In fact, for the sake of the tournament, it's good that it's USA, not Slovenia. Slovenia would be massive underdogs in their first second-round match. USA will be a formidable opponent. Here's the thing. Okay, helps the MLS, no doubt. But now, do you think American fans will follow probably every one of these guys who's out on the field, at least seven of them, right, are going to get positions at top European sides, at least top of the table, or there'll be stars on the lower of the table of the top four or five leagues in Europe. Don't you think with the globalization of television, of the premiership of La Liga, that U.S. fans will start following them?
I think so. The thing is that America has a lot of young players, and we already heard of players going into the Bundesliga. Yeah, I think a few more players will get picked up as well. So that type of experience is invaluable to U.S. soccer. They need to go out into the better leagues in the world to get the experience. And I think that just makes our profile larger on the global level, but also here locally seeing, you know, I've been following our American teammates in the Scottish leagues, in the British Premiership, in the Bundesliga. You know, we're sprinkling throughout. And
yeah, I think in particular, I think Donovan now is going to be followed. I think that is that is one thing that is now growth.
I keep hearing that Donovan is now, he's hated by the Mexican fans.
Yeah, I think it's more that Mexican fans love to hate Donovan. I don't think it's only actually Mexican fans that love to hate Donovan. There's something about him that provokes a very strong, at least ambivalent, sometimes even negative reaction. Though I have to say today, I mean, I've been warming up to him over the past 18 months, 2 years. I found that his whole role in that Beckham thing made him very intriguing and interesting to me as somebody who seemed to be resisting in a way a kind of a dark side of the MLS. There's something more to that guy than we've seen in the past, and we're getting a glimpse of it now, especially on the heels of his terrific performance for Everton when he was on loan this past season.
But at the same time, Donovan, I think, is conducting himself so professionally in the wake of a goal that was taken away in the last match against Slovenia. I thought he handled himself so professionally. He wasn't screaming at the refs. He wasn't behaving like the ugly American. Conducted himself very well. And here today, another legitimate goal was taken away. And you see nothing but class from Donovan. So I think that is going to help him win fans throughout the world.
Mark Torres there. We heard the voice of Jennifer Doyle with the blog From Left Wing. And now Pablo Morales, filmmaker, Gringos at the Gate.
Yeah, it's interesting because Gustavo Arellano asked me to help answer the question in his column that I hope comes out soon, why Mexicans hate Landon Donovan so much. And there's an actual event that's behind a lot of it, which is in the 2004, I think it was Copa America, they were playing in Guadalajara, and he actually urinated on part of the Chivas field, the Estadio Jalisco. It's
That'll get you hated.
But actually, it's not something – it happened in the early warm-ups. It actually happens fairly often, especially in some of these stadiums.
It's very John Terry.
Yeah. I heard the bathrooms were locked.
Yeah, there was a lot of stories. There was a lot of stories behind that. But the real reason for the hate, in my opinion, what I told – Arellano was throughout the history of the U.S.-Mexico soccer rivalry, yes, there were some American teams that showed a lot of grit, some determination. They would win games through, you know, the physicality of the U.S. team. The mental toughness is often attributed to their victories. But never, 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 never is the best player on the field an American.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the hatred really comes from. Because when Donovan won the Golden Boot in the 1999 Under-17 World Cup in New Zealand, he became the first person from the CONCACAF region to win a major World Cup award. And I think that was the beginning of this, oh my God, what is the United States starting to produce?
Yeah.
You know, these players that can shine at the highest level.
His goal today was really, I mean, that's the clutch player, right? The person who can really pull out exactly what's needed at the last minute because it absolutely must happen. I mean, that was the goal. That's what that goal meant today. And it was a really strong finish, just an absolutely fantastic moment. And exactly the kind of thing that the U.S. team has needed for a long time is a player like that, that you can count on. To really pull things together, it was a great win. It was a really great win.
I want to add something about Landon Donovan. I was incredibly impressed in 2006 with a short documentary sort of story feature that I believe ABC or ESPN did in advance of the 2006 World Cup about Landon Donovan. I might get this wrong or the details wrong, but I believe his sister's boyfriend, like, was drunk or something and fell onto the tracks of the metro in Paris and had his leg severed. Okay? Donovan spoke about that. You know, they always sort of search in these little mini documentaries for the, you know, real hurdle that the people have to overcome. Well, okay. But Donovan spoke about this extemporaneously, and I was unbelievably impressed. I know these are very structured to find the most dramatic moment to make a positive impression on the character. But here's a guy I was talking about. Someone, a soccer player, talking about someone losing their legs and counseling the person that your legs, your body, are just there to propel your mind. And I thought it was a really beautiful human expression of dealing with trauma from somebody who, of course, values his legs. I mean, I don't want to, you know, get too analytical on it, but I was so impressed with Landon Donovan, and I saw the person again, albeit some sort of negative side, but speaking his mind, speaking it very intelligently with the whole thing that transpired with Beckham.
Yeah. I think going back to your original idea of what's this going to do in terms of the marketability of the U.S. players, one of the fascinating aspects of world soccer is that you have countries like Argentina and Brazil that export their best players to Europe. And their national sides do not suffer for this export. But I'll be fascinated to see, as the United States players become more visible in foreign leagues, whether the U.S., I don't know, sense of superiority will think, well, why aren't we the best league in the world? Why aren't they staying home?
Thank you very much, Mark Torres, Jennifer Doyle, and Pablo Morales. This is The People's Game, a special edition after the dramatic U.S. victory over Algeria to win Group C. Our regular show will be available later today at www.thepeoplesgame.org.